Mouse Mouse. And of course, oh, there it goes. Hair. Okay, now we're going to start.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Well, okay.
The mouse died.
The mouse is dead. Ronan, well, I need
a
battery.
I saw a cat in the room. So.
Huh?
I saw a cat in the room.
I hate when that happens.
Hey, I got to...
quickly, while I fix this.
Give you an answer
there
for something.
There it goes. Okay, never mind. We're off.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
It's not working. It's. I mean, I can't even get it to go. Oh well, let's just talk. Let's tell dirty jokes.
Wait. Well, you know, I wanted to tell you something because a few weeks ago we were on the day Burt Reynolds died, and
yeah,
you
yeah.
asked me what my favorite Burt Reynolds movie was, and you put me on the spot, and I didn't think. And I have to tell you, when I thought about it, my favorite Burt Reynolds movie of all time is WWW and the Dixie Dance Kings, or WWW
and the Dixie Dance
yeah.
Kings.
Yeah, I love that.
Cool movie.
Oh, I love that.
Great. Okay, we're ready to go. Okay, now we're going to do your intro music, and let's hope this one works. Oh my God!
Three, two, one.
If anything can go wrong, it will.
Hush, hush, sweet Charlotte, Charlotte, don't you cry. Hush, hush, sweet Charlotte, he'll love you till he dies. Oh, hold him, darling. Please hold him tight and brush the tear from your eyes. You weep because you had a dream last night. You dream that he said goodbye. He held two roses within his
arms. Okay, so now everybody knows we are professionals.
Yeah. Holy sweet, crap. Sweet sounds of Patti Page. You know, every time I hear Patti Page, everything sounds like Tennessee Waltz.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. So, Bobby G and I have to ask you, was that an appropriate song for this book?
Oh, my gosh. That was like the perfect song.
That's the only one I could come up with. Okay, here we go. Our author tonight is Stina Holmes, and she is, of course, in New York Times and USA Today best-selling author. And we're going to be reading her bio in just a second, but I want to play a little bit more of Patti Page. Okay, that's enough.
Can I do karaoke?
Of course, Bob. You can do anything you want. You're Bob Brill. Okay, Stina Holmes is the New York Times and USA Today best-selling author of titles including Saving Abby, Stillwater Rising, and The Memory Child. Named in the top 20 women authors to read in 2015 by Good Housekeeping, oh good lord. She won the National Indie Excellence Award in 2012 for Finding Emma, as well as the USA Book News Award for The Word Game in 2015. Having her author brand featured repeatedly on sites such as Goodreads, BookBub, Redbook, and Good Housekeeping, Stina is an authority on creating an effective author brand and has been invited to speak on the subject at various author forums around the world. To find out more about her books, you can visit her website at www.stinaholmes.com. Will you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Stina Holmes.
Thank you so much.
Oh my God! This is only Richard Polinelli and I have surpassed the bad openings of a show.
That was awesome.
Now, well, you know what? The mouse was dead and it wasn't working. I was pounding the table trying to get the damn mouse to work. Bobby Jean, it was embarrassing. Stina, it was embarrassing.
It's live have a mouse radio. Trap, you know?
It's live radio, and this is going out live right now.
Hey, it's what it's all about, man.
That's what we am professional. Yesterday we couldn't spell professional. Today we am one. Okay.
It's all good.
Okay, we actually received and read a book of yours, Stina, called The Forgotten Ones.
Yeah.
And, well, I actually listened to it on audiobooks because I drove up to Bellingham, Washington.
Wasn't it amazing?
It was much better than having to read the book because, well, but like Bobby Jean says, when she got confused, she could go back and read. When I got confused, I had to hit rewind and I was driving.
Yeah.
So
it didn't work out too well. If you don't have the book in your hand when you're behind the wheel.
And, Stina, this is not a slam, but I was very confused many times in this book. I don't know if everybody tells you the same thing.
No.
I knew that Bella and Judy were real, and then I thought they were somebody's imagination. And then I thought they were real. And then again, I thought they were somebody's imagination.
Yeah, I wanted to play with your mind a little bit.
Well, you
well,
done did
you
it.
Did.
You did it, girl.
He almost drove off the road.
Oh, my God. And I'm screaming at my radio, come on, which is it? A or B? Pick one.
That's why the mouse died. You screamed at the electronics and it got you back.
I said, pick one.
Oh, I love the idea. I love knowing that you were confused about it because then I did my job because I wanted my readers to not know.
Well,
I wanted to keep you guessing, and I wanted you to kind of make up your mind by the end of the book and see which way you went. And then it's been really interesting to find out the different ideas and thoughts readers have had.
Well, I went as far as to call Bobby Jean. I did. I said, are you as confused as I am? She goes, well, yeah, but I'm not that far into the book yet.
She was on the the introduction.
Yeah.
No.
And I'll tell you, Stina, I honestly believe you may know the truth on the end of this book, but I still think it was Bella, not Anne-Marie. I'm just
because Anna Marie has the same, Elle has the same freckles as Gertie.
But she'd said many times in the book that they were almost identical. They could be twins.
Yes, but as soon as she walked into David's hospital room, he knew right away that she was the granddaughter.
Okay,
and she couldn't be the granddaughter if Bella was. We're not even like
Stina.
Okay, Stella.
Stina, please break the tie. Whisper the answer to me, would you please?
Stina, why don't you go ahead and tell share a
yeah,
little
give
bit
us,
just
please.
About
tell us about this book, Stina.
Tell us about this book.
Okay, well, The Forgotten Ones is a book that I loved writing, and it was one of those I've written over 30 novels now, and this one just poured out of me. It just came so easily for me, and I wrote it while my daughter was in the hospital for a suicide attempt, and I think I was just able to put all my emotions that I had for that story in, and it just worked. I set it in my hometown, the home that David and Gertie lived, and they raised Marie. That was my home that I grew up in.
Oh, wow.
That was my barn in the back that I would go and play in, that little room. My dad had Coke bottles all over the top of the walls. I grew up in Kincardine. I went to the hospital. I was a candy striper there, and my mom used to be a chef at the hospital, and, you know, the beach and the ice cream, like, those are all from my memories.
Wow.
This was such a story that was so close to my heart.
Okay.
I loved every single moment of it.
Okay, now I have to ask the one question that becomes the elephant in the room.
Yes.
Did your dad surreptitiously bury babies in the backyard?
there are no buried. Well, the only buried bones in the backyard are animals.
You bury phones. I like it.
We had chickens and rabbits and cats and dogs. That would be it.
Gotcha.
You know, I got a serious question here for you, Stina, and that was you mentioned that you were starting to write this thing when you were in the hospital with your daughter was in the hospital on a suicide attempt,
mm-hmm.
and then so much of this is your life. Tell me about that process. I mean, how did that had to really play with your mind as well as, I mean, you must have been sitting there, can I tell the story? Do I want to tell the story? It's me, or was it something else, or was it easier?
Oh, that got a response.
Yeah. So I think that the simplest way I can answer this is, rather than dealing with everything that was happening in my real life, I couldn't break down in my real life, so I could break down writing this story. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I needed to write what I did. And I wanted to write something that wasn't happening right now to me, but something that was really close to home. So you know, David was my father. My mother was not Gertie. I will say that in case she's listening.
That's always a good thing.
Yeah. In case she's dead. Mom, you're not Gertie.
She didn't blow anybody's brains out. Mom, what you?
But I think it was just, I just needed to write something that was really emotional. I didn't know where I was going with the story. I knew I wanted to write about an old truck driver who loved his family so much that he would do anything for them. And then the story just kept going, and it just kept coming out, and I had no idea where I was going, and it kept shocking me. And even until the end, I didn't know if Marie is really Anna Marie or Bella Marie. Like, it was, that was something I had to go over and over. I think I rewrote that ending 4 times. My editor and I would talk about it. I would talk about it over with friends. In my gut, I knew what I wanted to do, but everyone else was telling me differently. And so I ended up writing that ending to, I know who she is, but I wanted you to know. Like, I wanted the reader to be able to decide who she was for them. Because if I say it was one person, then there's so many consequences for that. And if I say it was the other, then there's so many consequences for that as well. So, while I know who she really truly is, I wanted you to be able to decide and feel good about your decision. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted you to think about who Marie was and what she was dealing with and suffering with, and how that might play into the ending as well.
Mm-hmm. Well,
totally does not answer your question.
No,
that was a
political way around the question. I have to say,
it leads me to the next question, and that is your daughter, who's I'm assuming has read the book and knows the story, and
she has not.
How old is your daughter?
Well, so she is 18 now.
Okay.
I have three. I have a almost 20, 18, and 15.
Okay.
And she's well, she is good, and she is actually over in England working as a nanny.
Wow.
That is crazy, isn't it?
Well, good for her. I mean, you know, everybody needs a hobby.
Well,
trying to figure out what she wants to do with her life. She's having fun traveling.
Yeah, because the question I was going to ask, and I guess you've already answered it, is that what were her thoughts when she found out that you wrote this at this particular time, but you have said that that didn't happen, right?
Right. So what was her thought? To my kids, I'm just mom, and they don't like it if I write about their story, their lives, in the book. So I told her that, you know, this is not about a teenage wanting to commit suicide or having mental health issues. I might have lied about that. That it had nothing to do with her. It's just a story. But that because of her and because of when I wrote it, I wanted to help out. So she agreed with me that when it came out, I could tell her story, and I could say that, you know, I wrote it while she was in the hospital, because I want, my goal is to donate 50% of the proceeds of the print copy to a mental health charity. It's located in British Columbia, and they focus on suicide awareness for teens and young adults.
Well, I mean, you obviously knew something about mental health, because the book is, well, actually, the mother in the book was, I don't know, schizoid?
Crazy?
Yeah, nuts.
Do you mean Gertie?
Yeah.
Or do you mean?
No, not Marie. Gertie.
When you say the mother, yeah, you mean Gertie.
Gertie, Marie's mother.
Ultimately the grandmother.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was, and as a matter of fact, it seemed to me that Elle really kind of took that to a different level when she said, well, I like, what's his name? I know. Oh, what's the grandfather's name? David. I like David as David my grandfather, but I don't want anything to do with Gertie. I thought, yeah. Wow, I mean, you know, that's kind of a recognition type thing.
She says I have a little support.
And now she's wondering if she has some of those traits herself.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think that's a fear that everyone would have, right? Knowing it's hereditary.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well,
I
go ahead.
Can I just jump in for a second here?
Of course. Always.
This book was really a fun read, and it is a puzzle. It's a thriller. It's a mystery. It's psychological suspense. You kind of have a, I don't know what genre this goes into.
Yeah, me either.
Exactly. But I always love to, you know, think about the title of the book and how it relates. And so I figured pretty early on that we were going to get the story of the Forgotten Ones. And my definition for who those were kind of changed as the book went along. I thought it was fascinating that you write two characters in first person. We're getting this story through David's eyes, and that whole opening with David in the hospital, and he's really kind of cursing himself. Like, we think he's the things that he's saying to himself.
Yeah,
talk about a negative.
Monster.
Yeah, talk about a negative. Yeah. Somebody with negative self-talk.
Well, it's like I always knew I'd go to hell, but I never thought it would be like this.
Yeah. The whole opening was so gripping, but then we see him through like other eyes, and we see that he's not. You know, he's well. That's what we're all going to determine. You lead us along the path, and we're going to have our own. We're going to make our own decisions. But I thought it was. And I wondered as a writer, how challenging was it to work with two different, very major characters and having to write first person for them both?
Oh, you know, I loved it. It shocked me how easy it was. I'm writing a book now, and I'm in my fourth edit with my editor, and some of it's in first person, and it's a lot harder than the Forgotten Ones was. And it amazes me the difference. Because I'm like, oh, I did it with them. Like, I could do it easy with the Forgotten Ones. And David and Elle, like, it was so easy for me. And now it's a lot harder. They just poured out of me. David was so real to me. He was a mixture of my father and my grandfather. And I loved how he would love everyone. And he would forgive anything, but he couldn't forgive himself. And he classified himself as a monster. And even though he knew what had happened with Gertie, he believed that she was in heaven, that she deserved forgiveness, but not him. And I loved the idea of writing him in a way that people would be conflicted, because they want to like him, but yet he was a little, some might think that he's weak.
Mm-hmm.
You might not agree with the decisions that he made, but then that was a whole theme that I wanted to work at. That, you know, as kids, our parents, either we love them or we hate them, and we can either understand everything that they did or we understand nothing that they did, and we'll judge them based on what we saw, right, or what we heard as children, and yet we don't understand, that they had reasons for what they did, and it's hard to put ourselves in other people's shoes. And I think that's what I was hoping for in writing that. You know, like, even I come from a very large family. My dad has 12 siblings, and I have, like, 100 cousins. And,
oh, my gosh.
It's a crazy, crazy family. And, you know, there's things that are in my family's past that I don't agree with. And I hear stories, and I'm like, what? How? I love this. I'm like, how could this happen? And then it's like, you know, I don't know what they lived, and I don't know why they made the decisions that they did. And I was hoping that when readers read this and they read David's story, and they might not agree, they hopefully will not agree with the decisions that he made, they would maybe try and understand it a little.
Mm-hmm. Well, the nature of the story is really, really big in this book, too. There's a lot of, you know, David had a knack for sharing stories. Anna Marie has this wonderful knack when Elle is little of the sharing of stories and the fairy tales. And just you have woven such a wonderful landscape, the gardens and just everything that you take us through. I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Stina, I got to ask you, you know, as writers, whether you're writing a book or a screenplay or whatever you're writing, it's always the best thing. We always get the best stuff if we tear ourselves down and tell everything that's inside us because it's really relatable and we can relate that. But at the same time, you know, we have this thing where it's like, oh my gosh, I can't let people know about that. You know, when you were doing this and you were looking at your family, and because like you mentioned, we all have family secrets that whether we want to tell them or not, or somebody's stopping us from telling them, were you having a real struggle with that? Because I know you said it's your house that and everything, it's your neighborhood, but did you have a real struggle with that?
Oh, I sure did. Yeah. I absolutely did. I struggled with how far to go, how much to tell, how deep inside I could go. There were scenes that I wrote that I deleted because I knew for sure that that was just me projecting onto the paper and it had nothing to do with the story. And yet then there were scenes where my editor would come back and she's like, okay, one scene in particular in the hospital towards the end, and that scene broke me having to write it when Elle and Marie, or Elle and Grace, were standing with David in his room. Mm-hmm. And when I first wrote it and I handed it in, it was hard. It was emotional, but I was able to move on from it. And she sent it back to me and she's like, I know you're not pushing yourself because of what you've gone through in your own family. But you're cheating your readers by not doing that. Mm-hmm. So I need you to dig in deep. And I was like swearing. Are you kidding me? I need some wine. So I didn't try to drink while I wrote that scene.
chocolate. Here we go.
Yeah.
I wrote, when I was done, I took a video of myself and I posted it on Instagram and Facebook. And I was bawling and I was a mess. My face was red, my eyes, like everything. And I was like, this is how emotional I get when I write my stories. Every single time. And if I'm writing one of those scenes where I'm not touched, then I'm cheating my readers, just like my editor told me. So I think you know what scene I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It broke me.
Mm-hmm. Is that okay? I know what scene you're talking about. Well, yeah, that was a pretty emotional scene.
Yeah, I still, when I go back and I read through it, I still cry.
Well, okay, you're allowed.
And for and for those who are listening and who haven't read it yet, you're going to want to pick up the book and read it now.
Yes, that's the whole idea, Stina. I don't know if you know this. This is called the writer's block.
I had no idea.
Well, I'm going to forgive you because you are in Canada.
Hey.
Thank you. Hey. Yeah.
Yep. Hey. What are you talking about?
Okay, we're gonna take a little break here, and
yes,
we're gonna give you a chance to emotionally come back down, and we'll pick you up here in about a minute and a half, and until then,
Uber's on the way.
Don't go away. You've typed your final period and you've stacked your last chapter. You sat back in your chair and you said to yourself, whew, "I'm done." Nope, not even close. Sure, you finished your manuscript, but it takes a whole lot more work to have a completed book. You know what it takes? Well, let's see. It takes editing. It takes rewriting, and then more editing, more rewriting. It takes formatting, proofreading, and more rewriting and more editing. Then, if you're real lucky, you can devise a cover, you can possibly get some proofs, you can get some books printed, and maybe, just maybe, you can get them on the shelf and start having some money come into your pocket, because that's what all writers want to do and that's what they all think happens. Well, why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books do that for you? For a very small investment, we can do all of the above for you, and you get the finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing and help you get some dollars in your pockets to boot. We're here for new writers that don't give the foggiest of what they're doing, or know the foggiest about what they're doing. And we, having learned it, we share and help you get the book of which you can be proud. So give us a call, 805-795-3165, or email jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com, or R. Paolinelli, that's spelled Paolinelli, @tuscanybaybooks.com. Or just send us a manuscript and let us navigate the rest, and we'll see what we're going to do with it. And Bobby Jean, you have something to say.
F. Scott Fitzgerald states, life starts all over again when it gets crisp in the fall. And Out West agrees, time to rework your wardrobe and refresh your attitude. Add a leather or suede jacket, pull on a new pair of stylish boots, slip on a jaunty sweater or wrap. A dash of cinnamon, a splash of cobalt blue, a warm red, a swing of fringe. Out West Shop has just what you need to spice up your life with a touch of the West. Shop online at www.outwestshop.com for the best of fine goods inspired by the West. Enter coupon code WB9 and receive $10 off your order. You can call us toll free 1-877-340-9378. It's always a great day out West.
And you had everything that everybody could ever want except one thing. And that was a hat for Richard Paulinelli. Nobody carries a size 12 hat. My God, that guy's got a big head.
He has to have one custom made.
Yep. Okay, here we go. You're leaving on vacation. Your tickets have been purchased. Your hotel reservations are confirmed. Mail delivery has been suspended. But, what about the dog? Well, all dogs rule day camp and sleepovers. It's the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. All Dogs Rule provides your best four-legged friend a place to run and play outside among orange trees and grass in a country setting. Your dog gets to be a dog. So All Dogs Rule offers additional services including individualized playtime, personal walks, swimming sessions in the creek, and training. Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. And when your pup returns home, that smile on his face will leave you wondering whose vacation was better, yours or the dog's. Well, we all know it's the dog's. So that's All Dogs Rule, 805-524-1100. And we are back in the studio. It is now 7:27. We have been speaking with Miss Dina Holmes and about her book, The Forgotten Ones. And if you haven't read it or if you haven't even thought about it, take a look at it. Look it up. You can find it on Amazon. You find it on all the online booksellers. Give it a shot. Oh, yeah, Bob's showing me. Oh, look what I got. It's a fascinating story, and it's got so many levels to it. It's really hard to put a label on what genre it is. So, is there a particular genre that you would like this book to show up in, Stina, or do you care?
I when I think about it, it's like psychological suspense or family suspense, mm-hmm. domestic suspense, that kind of thing.
My friend Don Glute would say it. Going off what's happening here, it's horror.
Well, my goal was I usually write women's fiction, and I love suspense and psychological suspense and psychological thrillers, and that's where I want to go as a writer. That's the journey that I'm going on, and so I knew that to get there and to bring my readers with me, I needed a book that would bridge the gap.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what The Forgotten Ones was. It's a blend of what I want to write in the future and what I was writing in the past.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, now the question serves. Seems that Bobby Jean brought it up about two characters that are done first person and the rest are done third person. Mm-hmm. Were you comfortable? Was that a real good scenario for you to do? I mean, was it a little more difficult? I know you say you enjoyed it, but writing mm-hmm. first person can oftentimes really, really throw you a sticky wicket. So I was wondering how it was for you.
To be honest, I love writing first person. It felt like it was my niche. Like it was, that's how I'm supposed to be writing. Mm-hmm. I loved it. It's the first time that I've done it. And I don't think I can go back.
Uh-huh.
Well, I fell in love with it.
But you switched back and forth. And that has got to be more difficult than just a first-person book.
So I'll say yes, but I didn't find it to be so.
Uh-huh.
But again, this book is completely different than any others that I've written in the fact that it just came out of me, and I've never had a book like that before. Now, like, the one I'm working on now. I love it, and it is twisty, so twisted.
We like twisted.
There we go. Don Gluten horror again. Now,
here we go. Bob perked up over there.
If you thought I was playing with your mind with the Forgotten Ones, then this one is even more so.
Oh my God! There's something that's worse.
I'm enjoying it.
Well, good. Let's talk a little bit about your process.
All right.
When do you like to write? What's your best time to sit down and be creative? Pick up the pen, fire up the computer, or whatever it is that you do.
For me, it is in the evening.
Uh-huh.
But I have a family, and so that doesn't always work. So I've, for the past 5 years, I've been trying to train my brain to work during the day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now up to, I can usually start writing around 10:30, 11 o'clock. And it's a struggle. Around 2 o'clock, it's like the pistons are firing and the words start flowing.
Mm-hmm.
But in the evenings, I could struggle all day to get 500 words and think that I've done a really good job.
Uh-huh.
And I could pick up my laptop in the evenings and start from scratch, and I can get 1,200 or 1,000 or 2,000 words within a couple hours really easy.
Hmm.
Bob. I think it's just how I started writing. I started writing in the evenings when everyone was in bed, and I just don't think my brain wants to go back.
Well, I think all writers, and I'm going to include myself there, and Bob is sitting over here. He's a writer as well. I think we all have a favorite time of the day to write. Now, I try to write in the morning, but usually if we have a good guest on, I'm busy reading a book, or I'm editing a manuscript, or I'm trying to get ready for this show. You know, and I don't always...
Can I be honest about something?
Sure.
The people who write early in the morning,
uh-huh,
they're messed up.
Well, thank you. I was just going to tell you I like writing in the morning.
God bless you, Stina.
I'm not taking back my words.
You don't have to. We still appreciate
you. Okay,
this
is spoken from someone who starts at 10:30 and doesn't get going until 2. So.
Right, yeah. And that's only, you know, we've had 2 guests on here now that have said the same thing. Write drunk, edit sober.
why can't we write and edit drunk?
Well, except you won't edit very well if you're drunk.
the words like there.
I know. The usually comes out T-E-H.
You know, that, the there, I get more, my editor always looks at it and says, there is this one is there, that's another one.
Well, there you go. Yeah, there's. Yeah. Well, you have a good editor. Mine never catches us. So you write till about 2 if you can, and sometimes at night you write and you can pick up a lot more stuff. I don't know how you do that. Talk.
I think it's like my brain has just shut off.
Mm-hmm.
And all the tasks that I needed to do, all the things on my to-do list, mm-hmm, everyone else that I needed to take care of is done and over with, and mm-hmm, I can finally just sit down and relax.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like my brain is like, okay, now it's my turn, and it just goes.
Yeah, I totally understand that. And although I'm not a writer, I do work at home currently. We have an online business, and I'm constantly in the website. I'm adding new products every day. I'm writing new descriptions, doing mm-hmm social media. And I find that during the day, even though I'm able to have the luxury at the moment to be at home all day long, it's answering email, it's talking to customers, and all of that, which is so important, and we love to do it. But mm-hmm, it isn't until kind of the world goes to bed, you know,
yep,
that I can't. And then I sort of get in, I guess I'll call it a zone. And I just work until I can't work anymore, and it could be you know, 4 o'clock. Then what's the trick though? You know that you're tired enough now to go to bed, or I start to see that I'm making mistakes. You know, I'm forgetting to put in sizes into the shopping cart, or some you know minor thing that's a big thing. How do you turn your mind off though when you're finally going to sleep?
You're asking me? Because I have no idea.
Yeah, I am. Because I need to talk to somebody who's on the same, you know, wavelength as I am with productivity.
Oh. I started, I found these herbal sleeping pills that I've been trying to take because my mind just will not shut off. And yeah, I think that's just part of being a creative person. Yeah. I finally downloaded Scrivener on my phone, which is amazing thing to have as a writer, but it's probably the worst thing to have because now I can go to bed and you know my husband's asleep and I have these ideas and oh I can just start writing it again when I really should be sleeping. But my brain just like my mind just does not stop even if I am tired and I can't keep my eyes open. It just does not go away.
Yeah, you're writing all the time, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, you're writing all the time.
Well,
yeah.
I managed to write a whole book in my sleep, so. I did.
Your website is really wonderful, and you actually have quite a few. You write some wonderful blogs, and you invite people to come in and kind of be a guest mm-hmm. blogger. You have a whole section on tips for writers. What would be... other than going to your website, which I would suggest everybody do that, what would you say is, you know, one or two major tips that you might like to share about the writing process?
The first one I would say is don't rush. Everyone else has their own journey to go on. And just because people you know around you are putting out books one after the other while you're still trying to work on your first one, don't let that sense of panic infuse you so that you're rushing through your story, because all you're doing is you're cheating your reader. So my first tip would be don't rush. Give that book the time it needs to be written and edited. The second tip I would say is always keep in mind your reader and focus on your readers, not your sales, when your book comes out. So sales, of course, are important. And as writers, when we publish a book, it's because we want people to buy it. And, you know, like sales is how I live. It's how I help to support my family. So, of course, I need those. But if I can focus on the reader first and make them important to me and to the story and everything that I do when it comes to my website or social media, if I put them first, then I'm building a relationship with them and I'm keeping that trust with them so that they'll read a story and hopefully like it and come back and want to read my other one.
Hmm. That's actually great advice.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Good advice.
You mentioned earlier that you were a candy striper. And
yes.
I'm wondering, you know, working in a hospital, I mean, yeah, I know you're not working in a hospital, yeah. but you're involved in a hospital. I'm kind of wondering if you pulled any of that. Were there things that you pulled out of that you remember at that time that you've used in your novels and at some point or another?
Oh, absolutely. I seem to have an affinity for writing older patients or like older people in my books, and I love writing about them. And I think it's because my favorite memories are when I volunteered at the hospital or the retirement home, and I would go and I would, you know, bring trays of food to people. Like, and I always worked with the elderly, so that was great. And I would spend time and I would listen to their stories, or I'd go and they would, you know, I'd go to the retirement home and they would teach me how to knit or bake, or we'd share cookies or we'd play games. Those are like my favorite memories, and so I always incorporate them into the book. So for like the Forgotten Ones, when David, he talks about, you know, the other nurse who is Elle's friend, Bryn, when she comes in and they're watching The Walking Dead together and she makes him cookies and whatnot. That's because that's something I used to do. I would come in and I would sit with a man that I knew. He was always alone and he had no family come visit him. And I would sit and I'd watch TV with him, and he loved to watch old Westerns. And thankfully, my dad was the same, so I knew who the characters were, and I knew what I was watching.
Jim and I are sitting here, fist raised, you know. I have this thing where when I work out at the gym and I'm on the treadmill, I'd usually do it for a half hour. I always dial up a 1950s or 60s half hour Western, and that's how I get through it. And you know, and Jim knows this, and Bobby does too. And we've talked about it before, but it's just a cool thing to do. And then you bring up this guy that you're relating to, so either we're both really old, or or this guy was really cool.
Well, when I go visit my dad, the first thing I know we're going to do is watch an old Western.
Oh,
so
bless you.
Yes.
We're always finding the channel on the TV for him.
With a Coke, right?
I have to hide in the closet and surreptitiously watch them by myself.
Pepsi, y'all.
Because Jerry gets up and she goes, what are you doing? You know, no, she didn't do that.
Well, it looks like you have some titles with cowboy in the in the title, and I could, you know, the westerns do come up just in this book. There are different references to the western, yeah. So I knew that in your heart of hearts, you're a westerner.
She's a cowgirl. Well, she's from Alberta. I mean, you know, it's Canadian cowboys.
Well, it's not like they don't have a rodeo up there.
Yeah.
We have the greatest outdoor show on the earth here.
That's right. That's right. The Stampede. That's right. Yeah. More cowboys and horses die there every year than anywhere else in the world.
I know.
Well, okay. The question that we ask all of our authors, and you have listened to the show, so you know this question's coming. In fact, I told you last night, so this is no secret. Have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get out of it?
So I do not believe in writer's block. I believe that there comes a time when our creativity is empty. And because we've used so much of it, we're always on a go, 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 and we never stop and slow down. So when I have those moments where nothing is coming and I don't know what to do next and I'm so frustrated because I know I should be writing and I should have a story, but I just can't, that's when I have to remind myself to relax, and I will read a book. And usually in those moments, no book I pick up is something I want to read. So I will just keep picking it up and putting it down and picking up another one and putting it down. Or I'll go on Netflix and I'll binge watch something. Whatever I can that just helps bring those creative juices back. I don't believe that we have writer's block, because as writers, I think we always have those stories in us, and that creativity within us is always there. But it's like a well that if we use it up too much, if we don't respect that creativity within ourselves, we can go dry. Hmm. And that's the last thing we want. Hmm. So learning to respect that was something I had to learn. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to do because I see everyone else. It's a rat race almost, right? When you talk with other authors and writers and how fast they're writing and how much they write and how dedicated they are. And then I think, oh my God, like I only did like 200 words today. And those, like, I had to pull them out of me. I don't know how you did 5,000. But you just have to respect that we all have our own process. And sometimes we just need to refill.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question, because that's something that doesn't come up very often with writers, and I don't know that we've ever asked this question on the show before, so this may be something brand new. Bobby, you may want to write this down.
I'm typing as we speak.
Okay. Did you find, as you were writing your very first novel, that you had to develop respect for yourself to be able to tell your story correctly?
Oh, I realized that no one will believe in me more than I can. And if I don't believe in myself enough, or like you say, if I don't respect myself enough to tell the right story in the right way, then no one else will.
Good answer. Good answer. I think all writers, Bob, I know you're included in this. I think we all had to come to that realization.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's
when you first decide that you're going to sit there and write the book, mm-hmm. and you evaluate what you're going to write and how you're going to write it, and mm-hmm. maybe you don't have a style yet or something, but you have a story you want to tell and how you're going to tell it, mm-hmm. you have to sit there and, like she was saying, you know, respecting yourself and understanding, okay, I'm going to do this.
Right.
And I'm going to do it my mm-hmm. way.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, there's going to be an editor, there's going to be publishers, and they're all going to want to rewrite my third act and the whole nine yards, you know, but I'm going to do this and get the story out that I want told. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No one else will do it but you.
Exactly.
And if you can't do it, then it's not going to get done.
Right.
And if you can't believe in yourself or respect yourself enough that you can do it, then you're failing even before you even try.
Yeah, I believe you. Last question for the night. Do you work from an outline, or do you free write?
Oh.
Remember,
dirty, that's a dirty little secret.
Remember, we have novices listening.
Okay, so I started pantsing. Mm-hmm. So I started just free writing. Mm-hmm. And the story comes to me as I write it. Mm-hmm. And that's the best part for me. Mm-hmm. If I know what's going to happen in the story, if I know how it's going to end, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. But now that I work with a publisher, and they tend not to like that too much. So I have learned to outline, and I have learned to give myself permission to not always follow that outline. So even though in the outline I know how the story is going to end, I know, even before I send that to my editor, that by the time I get to a quarter of the way through the book, that I am going to change so much of it, and there's going to be so many natural paths that are going to pop up as I write, and plot lines and more characters that I knew of, that it won't be the same. So I can still keep that surprise aspect that I need to write a book. But if I know exactly what's going to happen, and I've had a few of those books that I've had to publish with my editor, mm-hmm. That I knew exactly what was going to happen, and you know, they made me stay to the plot line, and those were like my worst books ever.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever write two endings to the same book?
Pardon?
Did you ever write two separate endings to the same book?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
The Forgotten Ones. I've got a four different endings.
Wow.
Oh, you know, and for yeah. you mentioned something that, and for new writers who people were just saying that the word she used was pantser, mm-hmm. and it means basically it's a writer's term. It means you've wrote by the seat of your pants.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what.
When you let the creative juice come.
Oh, us too. I tell you what, we're out of time, so it's been an absolute hoot having you on the show with us. You've been a wonderful guest, and I'm glad you've enjoyed yourself. At least I think you have.
I have, totally. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, you know what? It was absolutely our pleasure. And Bobby, do you have anything else that you want to ask before we shut this thing off?
What would be the perfect beverage and pairing to enjoy while reading your book?
Ask that, wouldn't you?
So how about a coffee with a cheesecake?
Mm.
That might go well.
Or sarsaparilla and a donut.
I was thinking martini with three olives.
Well, you know, if you want to add a little bit of Bailey's or something to your coffee, go ahead.
How did you know that's what I have in my coffee right now?
Oh, man, because I can tell you're slurring your words. Well, Stina, it's been wonderful having you. Thank you so much for taking the time out to join us this evening. And your friends, for your friends and family, whoever want to listen, about 5 minutes after we go off the air, there will be a podcast available. Go to the same website I gave you yesterday, and it'll be the one that doesn't have any verbiage on it. Again, thank you for joining us. Your book is The Forgotten Ones. It's available on Amazon and all online booksellers. And we thank Stina Holmes for joining us, and have yourself a wonderful evening.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay. Stina Holmes, nice lady.
Yeah, very much. Yeah. It was very, very enjoyable. That's one of our best.
When they're vivacious and they're bubbly and they're perky and you know, and it's I'm sure it was the gin, but hey.
You know. She's so talented.
I know. I got into one of her other books today, and I just read a couple pages, and I go, holy crap, this gal's a good writer. Then I thought, I got too many books to read now as it is. Okay, next week on The Writer's Block, we're going to host Jackie Carr. He's a writer. He's written two books so far. It's Martyr, and then the sequel, Martyr Substance. And he'll be on with us next Thursday at 7 p.m.
He's from Las Vegas, right?
I believe he is Las Vegas. Yes, he is. He's actually a friend of, what's her name? She wrote the vampire stories. Katie Salitis, yes. So he's going to be joining us, and Jerry's got us lined up with such good people. So I'm just really looking forward to following into next year. And, of course, we will be available after January. We'll still be here.
Cool.
I'm liking it. So, Bobby Jean, thank you so much, and we will be talking to you next week. And Bob Burrell.
Yes, I'll be calling in from Arkansas.
Oh my God! Really?
Oh my God!
Okay.
You're leaving Albuquerque for Arkansas. Oh,
for what Fort a trade. Smith, Arkansas, but calling in from the hotel room.
What a trade! Are you taking everything with you so you can we can Skype you?
Oh, absolutely.
Good girl.
Absolutely.
Right. I love your style. Okay, for Bobby Jean Bell, for Bob Brill,
yes sir,
and myself, Jim Christina, for the Writer's Block. Please join us next Thursday at 7 p.m. and I promise I'll make sure the batteries are in the mouse and they're working.
Woo-hoo!
Yeehaw! And for us, we're out of here.